hello, everyone. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., where this past week we were walloped with yet another blizzard, which put well in excess of 35 inches of snow on the ground here in the Washington, D.C. area. Some places had as much as 4 feet, and we're still slowly digging out here, and it's a very, very, very cold evening tonight. So we will tonight be talking about conspiracy theories and the current campaign by the White House Director of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, Cass Sunstein, a buddy of Barack Obama, who has written extensively about the need to infiltrate conspiracy groups and regulate their access to the Internet. And at the same time we see that campaign, we see one of Rupert Murdoch's employees at the Times of London, a reporter named David Aronovich, who has a new book out. It's been out for about a month or a little over a month, called Voodoo Histories. And it's basically slamming anything that's not considered the official record on a lot of issues, from 9/11 to the Kennedy assassination to the death of Dr. David Kelly and a host of other things. What we're seeing happen right now is an assault on freedom of speech, freedom of the press worldwide, and it's basically being promoted overtly by the likes of Aronovich, and we'll talk about his background a little later, and his employer, Rupert Murdoch, and anyone who doesn't think we need to bring back the Fairness Doctrine, which Ronald Reagan, listening to his neocon advisors, even back then they were there to scrap the Fairness Doctrine, needs to see a psychiatrist, because the Fairness Doctrine is what prevented the seizure of the media by these right-wing neocons, and it's the only thing we can do through government legislation to ensure that everyone has access to the media, including the Internet. And I am sick and tired of hearing people who say, oh, yeah, but it's government regulation. It's government regulation against the likes of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Wiener Savage and these other people, and also the people that are trying to prevent our access to information, Cass Sunstein and David Aronovich and Rupert Murdoch, and more covertly, the likes of George Soros, who's basically the gatekeeper of the left. And hopefully after tonight's show, you'll understand why it's very important to make sure that these people have their wings clipped and they're not able, because they have a lot of money and a lot of power, to be able to do what they have planned for the Internet, because it's the last vestige of freedom of expression, not only in the United States, but all around the world. And it's under assault from the Oval Office in the White House to number 10 Downing Street to the corporate boardrooms of the remaining news conglomerates, the networks. They all fear the Internet because they can't control the flow of information any longer. And we have to ensure that if it's through government regulation, then that will have to be the case. And the Fairness Doctrine needs to come back to give equal access for all. And we'll talk about this and other things right after this break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, Saturday Roundup, coming to you live this February 13th. From Washington, D.C., and the toll-free number, if you'd like to call in and weigh in on the subject we're talking about, which is the attempt to debunk quote-unquote conspiracy theories by this cabal of special interests. The toll-free number is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Let's get back to this this assault against people's freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of expression worldwide. I mentioned Cass Sunstein. This guy had a book come out a while back called Infotopia, where he warned against various conspiracy theorists who have websites and put out information that basically has the powers that be extremely worried. And now that's followed by this guy, David Aronovich, who works for Murdoch's flagship newspaper in Britain, The Times of London. Let's look at this guy, Aronovich. This guy is basically a neocon, but he's the son of the late economist, communist, and anti-American comic book campaigner Sam Aronovich. Well, and brother of the actor Owen Aronovich and scriptwriter Ben Aronovich. Does this guy remind you anybody? Rahm Emanuel? Rahm Emanuel, whose brother is a big super agent in Hollywood, and his other brother's one of the key White House architects on health care reform, which is basically propping up the insurance companies. It's another Obama fake out for the people who thought we were going to get health care in this nation. But yeah, it's the same. And isn't it funny? You look at the neocons like Bill Kristol and Richard Perle and these others, and they all have this communist where their father or their grandfather they were themselves, like David Horowitz, former leftist SDS student for Democratic Society. They all come out of the left. They should wonder, were they really infiltrators of the Communist Party? Were they infiltrators of the Socialist Party, the Trotskyite parties, the Stalinist parties, the anti-war movement? And I would suggest the reason they want to abuse so-called conspiracy theorists is because they were themselves and their families were part of a huge conspiracy. Let's face it, the international bankers had the money and the power, to put their fifth columnists in the various communist parties and trade union movements and other left-wing organizations in the United States and Britain, all around the world. And that's, in fact, probably what happened. That's probably what happened. And that's why we see these people, now that they succeeded in killing communism almost everywhere except for a few countries where it doesn't even exist in its pure form. All those countries are mixed systems. Now that they've succeeded in doing that, they can come out of the closet, so to speak. They can actually proclaim that they are conservatives, right-wingers, fascists. And that's what I would suggest. All these right-wing neocons are, their parents, their grandparents, they themselves in some cases were in fact fifth columnists, infiltrators of the kind now that Cass Sunstein is advocating the use of to go into various what he calls conspiracy groups. What he's talking about is the 9/11 truth movement. He's talking about other groups, the anti-war movement, those who are against the international banking cartels. That's who Sunstein is talking about. Let's face it, and Aronovich, let's listen to this clip. This is David Aronovich on a British in a British interview where he's just basically going through this litany of very glib, very smug, just like some others of these these people are who basically go on and on about conspiracy theorists. But let's listen to this clip of Aronovich, because his book is now going to be used as a reference source for the Cass Sunsteins of the world. We'll point to that and say, look at this body of work that's been done that proves that, you know, these conspiracy theorists are dangerous. And we can play this clip of Aronovich.
He because that's the other thing about this. The villain of the piece not only has to have enormous resources at their disposal to perpetrate whatever the conspiracy is, they have to have absolutely no scruples at anything. I mean, you have conspiracists who are absolutely insistent that Tony Blair or George Bush or Bill Clinton before them would casually order opponents or...
They have to be practically infernally immoral. It's interesting you mentioned Clinton. I don't talk about this in the book, but there were right-wing conspiracy theories about Clinton when he was in office, that he'd had his aide, Vince Foster, murdered, this man who committed suicide and so on, or that he deliberately ordered attacks on Al-Qaeda targets cynically in order to take attention away from his affair with Monica Lewinsky, you know, kind of belief that actually presidents act for such incredibly sort of capricious and bizarre reasons in the modern world. In other words, his immorality, having been shown in the Monica Lewinsky case, was actually total. And also his organisation was infernal.
But there are serious people out there, people who have a long track record, for example, of scrutinising government, who can find that there's a very thin line between, you know, exposing ministerial misdoings at a question time in the House of Commons and buying into, quite seriously, I mean, you do the case of one of the great parliamentary heroes of our time, Tam Dyel, who became convinced that a particular anti-war activist had been murdered in the mid-80s.
No, that's right. There's the case of Hilda Murrell, who was murdered in Shrewsbury, abducted from a house, found in a copse of woods in 1984. And the police said, this is a burglary that's gone wrong as far as we can see. But a great kind of superstructure was built up whereby people said, no, look, either one of two things. She was an objector to the next generation of nuclear power stations. Therefore, an enemy of the state in some kind of a way. Or, secondly, which is DL's argument, her nephew had been in naval intelligence at the time of the sinking of the Belgrano during the Falklands War, which he had a particular obsession about and pursued Mrs. Thatcher about for years. So he stood up in the House of Commons and said that he had actually been told that this was a security operation that had gone wrong. They'd used some kind of sub-team or other who'd gone in there instead of, you know, robbing her of whatever it was she was supposed to have. They found her there, and in order to keep her quiet, they'd killed her and all gone wrong. Anyway, the case wasn't solved for 20 years. Then a cold case was opened up. DNA was available from the scene, which couldn't be analysed back in the mid-80s, and was traced back to a guy who at the time had been a 16-year-old in a local in care, locally. And he was convicted. There was an appeal. The appeal was not upheld, and he is now in prison for the murder of Hilda Murrell. Is there an apology from Tam Dyel? Is there heckers like? And as if that wasn't kind of interesting enough, we have a current Tam Dyel wannabe in the shape of the Liberal Democrat MP Norman Baker, who has said exactly the same set of things about the death of the government scientist David Kelly in 2003, has effectively argued, well, he has argued that it was a murder which was tolerated by the British government of Tony Blair. So in other words, Blair, in his view, was capable of almost that kind of infernality.
Well, there you have it. That was Aranovich speaking. Let me go through what he said and knock him off his perch one by one. First of all, he said that Bill Clinton bombed Al-Qaeda targets to take attention off the Monica Lewinsky affair. That's absolutely false. Bill Clinton launched a cruise missile attack on Iraq. But Aranovich, of course, is one of those people who suggested that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and that George Bush and Tony Blair were absolutely correct in invading Iraq and occupying the country, even though later no WMDs were found. He's a subscriber to the Blair line before the Chilcot inquiry in London recently, but it was all worth it to get rid of Saddam Hussein. But that whole concept was a neocon concept. That was orchestrated and architected out of Jerusalem and out of the neocon think tanks in London and in Washington and in the Bush White House and with Dick Cheney and his circle of neocon advisors and Blair and his circle of neocon advisors. And so basically Aranovich is nothing more than a tool of Tony Blair. And then he brings up the case of Pam Dalyl. He's one of the longest serving members of the British Parliament. He represents Scotland. He's a Labour Party member. But I'll tell you the other thing he doesn't mention. Dalyl is one person, because he represents Scotland, who never bought the Lockerbie story that we were sold on, that this was a Libyan operation, and he brought that up time and time again. Of course, we know now that it was Iran, but see, Iran that was behind it, not Libya. It was retaliation for the U.S. Vincennes attack on the Iranian Airbus from that was flying to Dubai from Bandar Abbas. But we now know also that there was a lot of secret negotiations and other things going on between the United States and Iran. It was called the Iran-Contra scandal, and Israel played a complete role in that. And it was this ex-Mossad guy, Victor Ostrovsky, who wrote this piece of disinformation trying to say, oh, yes, but, you know, it was really Libya, and, you know, he offered all kinds of, see, that's how the Mossad operates. They have their people that sound really good, but, you know, if you really were a Mossad defector, you'd be dead. You wouldn't be publishing books. But that's what Aranovich is all about. The incident he's talking about with Hilda Merle, the anti-war campaigner, whose nephew was basically involved in the British ordering the attack on the Belgrano. And we'll get back to Hilda Merle and that story right after this next break. This is Wayne Mastin from Washington.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mastin reporting Saturday Roundup, and we're talking about this new book, this new latest Mein Kampf from the neocons against free expression, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, called Voodoo Histories by Times of London reporter David Aranovich. And we played that clip you heard before the break. I was going to say that he talks about the case of Hilda Merle. Hilda Merle was an anti-nuclear campaigner in Britain. Her nephew was working for the Royal Navy and was involved in Margaret Thatcher's ordering the sinking of the General Belgrano, the Argentine ship that killed a number of Argentinian sailors during the Falklands conflict. There was a lot of questions raised about that. He mentions that a person who was 16 at the time was arrested and convicted of that murder. However, the DNA they found in Merle's car doesn't quite match up with the fact that the young 16-year-old was not the person seen driving the vehicle. So here we have a case where DNA was possibly planted and that the wrong guy is sitting in prison. And, you know, the way the British judicial system is as corrupt as the American one, and they could indict and convict and execute a ham sandwich if they wanted to. The other thing he brings up is Norman Baker, the Liberal Democrat, Democratic MP, who has basically said that David Kelly, the British weapons expert, WMD expert, was murdered. He did not commit suicide with a rusty, dull penknife and over-the-counter medication, that he was murdered. And if Mr. Aranovich believes that was just a simple suicide and that the British government didn't play any role in the death of David Kelly, where is he on the issue of the fact that the records on Kelly have been sealed for 70 years? So one after the other thing about Pam Dalyl, the Labour MP, he's been extremely pro-Arab. Well, David Aranovich, I think we can figure out, you know, where he's coming from, what tribe, you know, his folks, you know, wandered around with, and he would not particularly care for an MP like Pam Dalyl from Scotland, who has taken up the Palestinian and Arab cause on a number of occasions. But that's the deal on Aranovich, and it's the same thing we're seeing play out here with Cass Sunstein at the White House, in the Obama White House, talking about conspiracy theorists. And we have Lark on the phone from Texas. Let's bring Lark on the line. Are you with us?
Hi there, Wayne. How are you?
Good. Good. Thanks for calling in.
Well, this is my first time to call into your program, so thank you for taking my call. I've been a regular listener for some time. I called really just to interject a word that I think better describes someone like Cass Sunstein.
Go ahead.
And so since I hear you often inveigle against so-called neocons and right-wing extremists and fascists and things like that, I think it's important for your listeners to understand that today we have fallen under what is called a body of law called communitarian law. And
okay.
Cass Sunstein is in fact a communitarian.
Yes, I'm well aware, and I'm well aware of one of the the pope of communitarianism is a guy named Amitai Etzioni. I'm sure you're familiar with him.
Yes, and whose name means he was formerly known as Werner Falk.
Yes.
He was a Israeli terrorist.
Yes.
But he has also had the ear of every American president since Carter in the capacity as a university professor at George Washington University, which is just a stone's throw from the White House.
Yes, I met him on a number of occasions, and I was always amazed at his willingness to say, well, things like the Fourth Amendment that, you know, prevents the government from unreasonable search and seizures and this type of thing. He says in the day of terrorism, maybe these things are a bit arcane or quaint, and we have to, you know, I mean, this is a guy who's basically wants to tear up the Constitution of the country.
Yes, and I think it's important for Americans to understand that at the end of the day, there's really only one law. And it is the law of contract, or if I may say, the law of contact. And in this day and age, we've had 100 years of basically a Anglo-American and European contingent of foreign bankers that are really traitorous to the aspirations of the American people that have been in control. We have had an overlaying of another fourth branch of government since at least the time of Lincoln, and especially since the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946 and those various things that happened in the interim. Communitarianism and communitarian law came into our came to prominence during the times of Nixon, Ford, and Carter, and it had a lot to do with our relationships and the U.S. government corporation's contracts with
right.
the United Nations. So I don't mean to hog the air, but it's important.
I think it's very good that you brought up communitarianism. It's one of the things that doesn't get a lot of play. And listen, we're going to take a break, but I'd like to keep you on until after the break so we can finish up this discussion of communitarianism, if you can hold on with us. This is Wayne Massey from Washington. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Massey Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming in live tonight from Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the attack by various parties against what are they call conspiracy theorists on the web, in print, and now emanating from the Obama White House. And we have Lark on the line from Texas, and we've been talking about the aspect of communitarianism, and one of its chief architects, of course, is Amitai Etzioni, a professor at George Washington University right here in the District of Columbia. And I think that is an important important thing to talk about, this idea of communitarianism. But, Lord, go ahead. You were talking about one aspect before our break.
Well, again, I mentioned the law of contract as being the only real law of the universe, and it can be defined however you wish, especially if you think of yourself as sovereign and possessive of free will. But I will say this. In 1974, we had a so-called UN declaration of the announcement of a new international financial order. That was in 1974.
Right.
In 1976, there was a UN declaration of interdependence. And it's important to note, and I haven't really completed all my research, but these were treaty arrangements. At least we're led to believe these are treaty arrangements. And if the United States Senate, for example, was to ratify such a treaty, is it incumbent upon them to make that announcement to the press and to the American people? So what I'm suggesting here is this. I think the American people have been deliberately left out of the equation simply because we're not thought of as being worthy of possessing such information. Why? Because the powers that be,
right,
the so-called communitarian philosopher kings, first
right.
of all, have forgotten to explain to Americans that, by the way, you're not sovereign, and number two, you really do not have any more rights. We didn't send the memo because we didn't want to hurt your feelings. You only have privileges, benefits, and responsibilities as outlined and contextualized by us, the philosopher kings.
Yes, yes. And of course, Etzioni, the leader of this communitarian movement, is one of their courtiers. He's on record as saying there ought to be national ID cards. He's against the unregulated use of encryption to cipher and decipher email, for example. He says that's a threat to public safety and national security. He also came up with the idea that sex offenders who serve their terms in jail should be transferred to guarded villages or towns where they are allowed to lead normal lives aside from the requirement that they stay put. Well, I wonder if Etzioni was 4 years old during the Nazi, when the Nazis were, we defeated the Nazis in Germany. I'm sure he's heard of Theresienstadt, which was the Nazi village or town where the Red Cross would come say, hey, look how we're treating these people. These people are being treated pretty nice. So I've noticed this about a lot of these neocons slash communitarians. A lot of what they push is right out of the Hitler, Goebbels, and Himmler playbook.
Well, but let's put it in another perspective, too, Wayne. What I hold to is this. Number one, your average American today that doesn't have devout loyalties, number one, would never proclaim himself to be a fascist or a Nazi or a corporatist.
Right.
They probably have never given it much thought.
Right.
And the average American today would never proclaim themselves to be communist. Well, these are just bad words, see?
Right, right.
But at the same time, we also deny that what we utilize as a currency is controlled by a private corporation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was in a discussion just this past week with somebody who worked at the Federal Reserve Bank who was proclaiming that the bank has to operate in secrecy. It's one of the greatest things about the bank, which he actually called the temple. And he said, no, it can't operate any other way. It's got to operate in secret. And I was just flabbergasted. But, I mean, basically, well, he was telling the truth, I guess.
Well, I don't want to you do very well on your own. I would love to discuss with you and perhaps your listeners someday things like scientism and perfectibilism and the so-called scientific dictatorship, because mm-hmm. that's, in fact, what we live under today.
Right.
It's a scientific dictatorship, and we must remember certain historical facts and where they might be relevant. Number one, Amitai Etzioni's name means, in Hebrew, tree of life from Zion.
Right.
So he's an avowed Zionist.
Oh, absolutely.
And we also have to remember that the throne of Britain is in fact Judah, or at least they say they're from the Judah tribe.
Right.
But, you know, what we have with the British flag is we have the classic double cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have today. America has never freed itself from the crown.
Oh, I think you're right, and I'm actually going to be writing a very critical piece on George Washington, because this country, after the Revolution, could have gone in one of two directions, and we took the wrong direction. We followed the Washington, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton line, where we, if we had taken the Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Benjamin Franklin line, we would have been a totally different country today. The U.S. would have supported the French in the revolution against the king. In fact, we were really, under John Adams anyway, and partially under Washington, we were basically tilting in favor of the British. The nation we just had fought a bloody revolution against, and it took us several years for the British to evacuate New York City, and Washington was fine with that. But in the time period that the British were in New York City, what was established there but the Bank of North America? And that today, you know, that germinated into what we have today with these large banks in New York that, of course, they were too big to fail. Well, the Bank of North America was the first of those, and it was perfectly fine to allow that bank to be established during the British occupation. After the armistice was signed, it was perfectly okay for Washington and Adams and those, what they call the Whigs, to do that. And basically, Washington was landed gentry, and he put brakes on the revolution. He said, we're only going to go this far, but we're going to keep our pretty British traditions, which, in fact, is what happened.
We only need to reread the Treaty of Paris. Also read the Treaty of Ghent, which followed the War of 1812, and then also look at the Congress of Vienna in 1815.
Right.
And just by reading these documents, we have to ask ourselves, who is the sovereign?
Exactly.
Who was the one that was making their case or their pleadings with hat in hand?
Right.
And in each case, it was the representatives of the U.S. government.
And the other big issue was that Washington and Adams, these were the Masons that basically took over the government, whereas Thomas Jefferson, anyway, was very much opposed to Freemasonry. He didn't buy into that. He didn't. You know, he was one of the smartest people we've had in generations in the United States. But fortunately, he did become our third president. But we did not follow his line of thinking. His and Madison actually authored the Bill of Rights because they did not trust Washington and Adams to with these new powers that were invested in them in the Constitution. So Madison said, we got to put a check on Washington, because even though he did turn down the kingship, he did govern like a king. And the grandson of Benjamin Franklin, Benjamin Franklin Bache, who was the editor of a newspaper in Philadelphia, was jailed during the Washington administration because he wrote things that were considered insulting to President Washington. And essentially, they put this guy on a pedestal, and we still worship him as a demigod.
Well, I want to just say that as much as many people that in my circle, and myself included, revered Thomas Jefferson, it must be remembered that he took the Lockean concept of life, liberty, and property and turned it on its ear in the Declaration of Independence when he instead penned the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And
yes.
This is a direct result of his being a deist.
Right.
As well as him being under the sway of the Rosicrucians in France.
Right.
And
right.
So, let me just say this, because I feel guilty, spending so much time with you, though I'm happy. Today, the British Empire, it never went away. Communism never went away.
Right.
The British Empire has proxies, and one of them is the United Nations. The other is Israel.
Right, absolutely.
And that is what is taking over our country today, is we have powerful corporate interlocking directorates under various names and guises around the world, but principally in the Vatican, in the City of London, the Crown.
Yes.
Also Washington, D.C., but also in the State of Israel, that are,
yes,
in fact, robbing Americans of every last vestige of what they once considered a right as endowed to them by,
right,
their Creator, with no one,
right,
no other sovereign before the Creator.
Right.
And this,
Mark,
is what's happening.
Yes. I just want to get to a clip that I want to play, so I don't want to cut, but feel free to call back, because this is a good thing we should continue in the future. But thanks for calling in from Texas. I want to play this clip of a former senator from Nebraska, Bob Kerrey, who in an interview stated that what happened on 9/11 was the culmination of a 30-year conspiracy. You're going to hear a lot of background noise because they caught this guy in the lobby after his speech. But let's play this clip real fast.
Why didn't they talk about Building 7 in the report?
That's good.
Why do you think that was?
I don't really have, I don't have an easy answer for it. I'm going to ask it.
Can you see this medical thing right now?
Yeah. Anyway.
Do you support a criminal investigation into 9/11? Because I know yours was an exposition. It was not a criminal investigation.
I don't think so, but I don't know. I mean, I do support a permanent commission to examine not just that, but lots of other things in this area.
But if it's a permanent cover-up, then it's. I mean, if it's an act of war and it's hiding things, which everyone on your commission knew that the Pentagon was changing their stories, lying to you, and it's a cover-up of an act of war, and under Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, it's treason. So unless we get to the very bottom of it, then we're still talking a treasonous exposition.
This is a longer conversation. I'm not sure this will ever get to the bottom of it.
We have to, or we can't save our countries.
I don't think, well, if that's the condition upon which we're going to be saving our country,
because the problem is it's a 30-year-old experience.
No, I'm talking about 9/11.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, you are. You mean
at
this?
Anyway,
I got it. You heard that Senator Bob Kerrey was a member of the 9/11 Commission. He replaced Senator Max Cleland, who also was a big critic of the commission and its work and not looking at various things. Kerrey said 9/11 was part of a 30-year conspiracy. Now, that would take it back to 1971 and the Nixon imperial presidency, the plumbers, all the things Nixon was trying to do. And we know with the Watergate incident, that included people who were absolutely part of the assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas in 1963. So, David Aronovich and Cass Sunstein, when you get people like Senator Bob Kerrey making comments like that, you can take all your snide and snotty remarks about so-called conspiracy theories and stick them, because the facts speak for themselves. And you people, Sunstein and Aronovich, you are shameful tools. You are part of the problem, certainly not part of any solution. And you shouldn't be writing for the Times of London, and you shouldn't have jobs in the White House. If we create villages, as Etzioni said, for sex offenders, we ought to create villages for people like you and keep an eye on them, because they're more dangerous than anything else I can think of. Mark's been holding on patiently from Texas. Let's go to Mark.
Wayne, I'd like to take up a handoff from where the last caller left off on communitarianism.
Yes, go ahead.
We have the enforcement arm of the government that, you know, most of us call the administrative branch. All these agencies, Wayne, they're the ones that are the enforcement branch for communitarianism.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Now, when the government just went down, I mean, you could go to any one of the government websites that have a lot of the bills and the acts that have been passed. Mm-hmm. If you'll just put up Monetization Act,
right,
up in a box,
yeah,
you will be laden with nothing but hits out your yin-yang.
Yes.
I just got my phone book a week ago, and I started looking through it, went straight to the blue pages. Wayne,
yeah,
they're all underneath it now.
Right, right.
That's the Modernization Act to enforce communitarianism through federal agencies, which, if it was brought up in front front of the Supreme Court, it would have to be voted out.
Well, I agree with you. And you mentioned to anyone on the street communitarianism. It sounds a lot like communism, but it isn't. And it's much more, you know, they don't really parade around and say, hey, we're T-shirts saying, you know, we're communitarians. And, you know, with the, they don't have any kind of logo or symbol. But I think it's much more insipid, as you're suggesting.
We can't even vote these folks into office that run these agencies. We can't vote them out of office.
You're absolutely right. And we're going to take a closer look at communitarianism, I think, in the future programs. But thanks for weighing in, Mark, from Texas with that.
God bless you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And let's get to Kevin before we take a break. We'll keep him on during the break. And Kevin, are you there with us from Australia?
Yeah, Wayne, hi. I really enjoy Republic Radio. I especially enjoy your show because it's just factual. It reports absolutely the truth. And it's absolutely the most accurate, and there's no emotion involved. It's just fact.
Yes, well, and facts is... You know, facts, according to Mr. Sunstein and Mr. Aranovich, can be very dangerous because they think they're all being brewed in some big conspiracy.
Yeah, those two gentlemen, in my books, are just nothing but crooks. They're just lying, conniving crooks. But anyway, that's a fact, but how does that help the problem? You know, I'm thinking that we could expose these kinds of people till the cows come home, and eventually it's going to make a change, but it's going to take a long, 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 long time.
Okay, Kevin, just let's hold it right there. We'll come back to you right after this short break. This is Wayne Mattson from Washington, D.C. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, and we're talking to Kevin, who's on the line from Australia. Are you still with us there?
Yeah, I'm here, Wayne. Hey, listen, I'd like to canvass a new strategy to expose these people for what they are. Now, in America, there's about 300 million people, of which a great proportion place a Christian banner over themselves and say, oh, we're Christians. Now, Jewish people can open up a synagogue in pretty well any neighborhood they like, around America, Australia, UK, or wherever.
Certainly.
But you try and open a Christian church in Israel. Like, that's almost totally impossible.
And the only ones who are given any kind of leeway there, I understand, are the Pat Robertson types. And, you know, obviously, you know, they're so totally pro-Zionist, pro-Israeli. They're fine. Yep. They're fine with them. But we see what happens to Catholic churches. They're actually
What I'm thinking is the more mainstream churches. If the American people said, okay, we want free access to your turf. We want to establish churches there where you might get a black preacher who would stand up and tell it the way it is.
Yes.
Now, what's going to happen? The first thing that's going to happen is you're going to get the loony fringe within Israel coming up, and they're going to start firebombing Christian churches and doing all sorts of evil.
And while we're on it, why not Saudi Arabia as well? That's
true.
Both theocracies.
I agree. Yeah, exactly.
Can you imagine
300 million American people donating $10 billion or $20 billion or however much of their tax dollars per year if their Christian people are getting bombed by a pack of hoods. It's just not going to happen. The friendship's going to diminish very quickly.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's not a two-way street with these relationships. And I also want to just say before we go on a break, we're talking about conspiracies. I'm going to read something about, this was November 22nd, 1963, before anyone heard that President Kennedy had been shot in Dallas. This is what, I'm reading this. This is from a column. We were a few doors down from the Oval Office where the rug or something was being changed and the furniture emptied out. The president's famous rocking chair was resting on top of a pile of cabinets as such in the little anteroom just outside. Come to think of it, this may be the only proof of a conspiracy that Oliver Stone's movie JFK somehow overlooks. The person who wrote that, Daniel Moynihan, who was an assistant labor secretary at the time, was in the White House. They were emptying out Kennedy's Oval Office before the word came from Dallas that he had been shot. He said the door opened and in burst Hubert Humphrey, eyes streaming. He grasped Dungan, who was a presidential aide who had risen. What have they done to us? Humphrey gasped. They, of course, were the people in Dallas. No one in particular, just the bunch that never did like Kennedy, one of them or whatever, crazed enough to do some cowboy shootout thing. So the author of this, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the one-time vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, writing this back in the early 90s. So you've got Bob Kerry talking about 9/11 being a 30-year conspiracy, Senator Moynihan talking about this. Those conspiracies are real. And thanks for calling in from from Australia, Kevin. The conspiracies are real. They came right from Daniel Moynihan, Bob Kerry, and many others. So Aranovich and Sunstein can stick it as far as I'm concerned. This is Wayne Massa. We'll be back next week, the same time.